Hello everyone and welcome to Eat Life News, a show dedicated to bringing you all the latest headlines, scoops and narratives going on in the crazy world of Ethereum. I'm your host Dennis Omer, we're joined by my co-host DeFi Dude and Liz from Brighton. It's the week starting August 23rd. We've had quite an eventful past 7 days. We've had the biggest white hat rescue ever. We've had a blockchain merger. Lots of news from DeFi, lots of news from L2, from NFT. And there are probably over 100 different updates that we could have covered. And I'm at this stage pretty sure you could have a 24/7 nonstop Ethereum radio show just to cover all this stuff. But let's try and start somewhere. And whenever there's a story about Sam CZ Sun, the prolific white hacker, we have to start there. So DeFi, dude, give us a rundown of what's just happened.
Yeah, so Sam CZ Sun, the famous and obviously very talented white hat hacker, he actually announced that he pulled off one of the biggest white hat rescues ever. He basically found a critical vulnerability in SushiSwap's Miso platform and saved $350 million. I highly recommend reading his blog post on this in the paradigm.xyz blog. He kind of goes over it and it reads almost like an action movie with like minute by minute plays of what went down. And you know, in the past, seeing him rescue other things, it's just always great. Like, it really does feel like you're in a movie and like he just does awesome work. So, he breaks down the events. It's kind of like the encounter. So, you know, how his attention came across Miso, then the discovery, how he discovered the vulnerability, disclosure, reaching out to the team, you know, letting them know. You got to be very careful too, obviously, not to make it known outside of who needs to know, preparation. You know, coordinating with the Sushi team on the game plan, how to rescue those funds, then the actual rescue, you know, how the white hack was carried out, and finally the reflection, you know, looking back at how it all played out from the beginning. And just really good post, and obviously incredible move to be able to save that, let alone, you know, SushiSwap, a platform that we're all very familiar with. How fast it all happened too, it was just so impressive. Sam ZZ Sun discovered the vulnerability in a little over half an hour, disclosed it to the team within 20 minutes, had the war room prep in like 30 minutes, and the fix was implemented in 3 hours. So basically 5 hours total to protect $350 million from falling into the wrong hands. I mean, huge, huge respect to him. Sam ZZ Sun, he's saved so many teams, not just SushiSwap, from hundreds of millions of dollars in attacks. And his contributions to the Ethereum space, they're just immeasurable. I mean, this guy, seriously, he's put in so much work and really awesome.
What a story. And I think we all have to like give him, you know, our huge gratitude. I don't know what we would do without him being in this space. He's one of the most valuable kind of assets this space has. Having a white hat hacker who's incredibly talented and can spot things where other people can't. He can coordinate the rescue, and he's done it so many multiple times in such clever ways. So again, hats off to him. I think the space is very lucky to have such a person, you know, looking out for us and having teams back like that. Now, you might remember last week we brought the story of how SushiSwap and Optimism teams were debating, and there was a bit of a kerfuffle whether Uniswap should have deployment priority on Optimism or not, because SushiSwap were ready to deploy. And this week, Uniswap was again involved in some drama. A few days ago, Dune Analytics tweeted out a PSA to all Uni holders. And it was basically to catch the whole Ethereum community's attention and just to say there's a Uniswap governance proposal with less than 24 hours left that wants to give Flipside Crypto $25 million in Uni tokens, and that there is almost zero community attention on this. So the Dune team are kind of raising the alarm because they're saying grants should only go to community members, not to service providers, because for service providers, there's so many out there. There's Dune, there's Graph Protocol, there's Token Terminal, Nansen. There's no reason why there should be 8 full-time employees and all being funded, the whole daily operations being funded by Uniswap. And there was also some concerns that, you know, there's this 3-member Uniswap oversight committee, and it happened to include Flipside's CEO himself. So there were some tweets about what constitutes a conflict of interest. Is this a conflict of interest? And as soon as the attention was raised, many people started debating it, and many people actually rallied against the proposal. There was this tweet thread from A16Z like setting out their position and tweeting why they were against it. And then at some point, there was even further drama when there was a bug in, I don't know, not exactly the UI, but like some kind of interface between the UI and actually voting on the Uniswap smart contracts. And teams that wanted to vote against the proposal ended up voting for it. In the end, what happened was some of the uni that was staked to the proposer so that he could have the power to propose, that staked uni, some of it was withdrawn. And what this ended up doing was dropping the proposer's uni balance below the threshold required to make a proposal. And therefore, the proposal was actually canceled, never went through. But it was a moment where we're looking at, you know, how do these governance processes work out? Like, do these models, are they airtight? Do they have any weaknesses? Is this a weakness? And yeah, I mean, this is part of a growing ecosystem, and we're going to see more experiments like that as well in the future, I'm sure of it.
Next up, we've got a first of its kind merger of one blockchain actually merging with another blockchain. So Polygon bought and merged Hermes Network in a $250 million deal. Hermes is a zero-knowledge rollup scaling solution, and ZK rollups are, you know, considered one, if not the most promising scaling solution for Ethereum. So, you know, as we all know, Polygon is aiming to kind of be that scaling, like a suite, I guess, of scaling solutions. So it's not just one scaling solution fits all. So I guess, you know, this move definitely makes sense. And it kind of comes as part of their strategic focus on ZK technology as well. We'd mentioned in previous episodes how Polygon was teasing, you know, some of that ZK technology, and that they also recently announced a $1 billion commitment to developing, you know, ZK-based systems. So this Hermes acquisition is part of that strategy. And Mihailo Belic, the Polygon co-founder, said that, and I quote, "We consider ZK cryptography the single most important strategic resource for blockchain scaling and infrastructure development. And we have a clear goal to becoming the leading force and contributor in this field for years to come. So we're looking forward to, you know, the competition between Starkware, ZK Sync, and now Polygon, and obviously any other ZK rollup solutions that come out there. And it's super cool to see, you know, ZK technology, I guess, develop more and more. I mean, you know, it's been around for some time, and it seems like it's really started to ramp up these past few months.
In other L2 rollup solution news, we have a new largish player in the Ethereum world coming and trying to attempt a rollup solution. Now, many of you will remember this project, Omisego, or OMG. They've been around since the 2007 ICO craze, I guess. And back then, they were trying to build a payments network on top, or let's say adjacent to Ethereum. They were going to connect payment processors, gateways, and financial institutions. And then from there, they moved and tried and, well, developed Plasma technology, which is similar to state channels. And there was a few other pivots as well. And now they've just announced that they're building an Ethereum layer 2 optimistic rollup solution called Boba Network. Now, they forked the source code for Optimism, and in their announcement, they mentioned they'll be optimizing it for user experience. So basically, they will offer fast exits through community-driven liquidity pools. And they will also have an NFT bridge to allow NFTs to launch on Boba and then to be easily brought onto Ethereum main chain if necessary.
And on a side note, Hayden Adams, Uniswap's co-founder, he actually tweeted that in spring 2018, 6 months before launching Uniswap V1, Omisego actually wanted to hire Hayden and have him launch Uniswap under the Omisego brand. And apparently Hayden asked for $2 million in OMG tokens and says, you know, he was then ghosted by the team. So just kind of crazy to think like where we would be right now with Uniswap and all that if, you know, that went through. But he did mention that he made friends through their team. You know, these people were supportive at launch, so there's no hate between them or anything. But yeah, just crazy to see, like, imagine the world in crypto where Uniswap was under Omisego brand and just, you know, how different things might be and look. So
yeah, interesting to think about, you know, what would happen? Would Uniswap be as big as it is now? Who would have launched it? In other news, we finally got EIP-1559 on MetaMask. MetaMask is like the most popular wallet out there. And what does this mean? It means transactions should now be included in blocks much more reliably than ever before, and much more efficient, so therefore maybe even a slightly lower cost. They've released a video on how to set transaction priority for your transaction, although it's, I think it's pretty straightforward. And first, the rollout is happening on mobile, and then it will happen on browser extensions soon, although I think by the time you listen to this, it might already be live. I think I might have seen it in a Chrome browser. So the MetaMask team were actually mentioned on Twitter a few times recently because they've come for a bit of criticism for not developing the wallet as much as they could have or as much as maybe people felt they should have. And I keep seeing on Twitter the request for this feature and that feature. And then another criticism that they keep receiving is that the swap fee is just super high. It's about 0.75% to 1% per swap. And I think they're also making like $10 million worth in monthly fees. So Matt Luongo from the Key Project announced in a Twitter thread that, you know, MetaMask was starting to feel more like a Web2 company with the way they were operating. And therefore, he's actually put together a small team to ship a wallet that meets, he says, the needs of the new open internet. So he says this wallet will be fairly launched. It will be, its goals will be sustainably aligned with its own users, and it will be wholly and it will be owned and governed by the community. And they're calling this the Tally Wallet. It will at first focus on DeFi, and in a follow-up release, it will also include native L2 and NFT support, and we're kind of looking forward as well. We always need competition in this space, like MetaMask have been great. But yeah, there are features that users want, which MetaMask doesn't currently meet. Now, speaking of wallets, I heard that there was an Aave proposal to build a wallet for Aave.
Yeah, there was actually. A team called 2001 DeFi have just submitted a proposal a little while ago to build out a dedicated Aave mobile iOS and Android app. They submitted their proposal to the Aave governance forum, and you know, feedback in general has been pretty positive about building this out. The team are highlighting that advantages over just accessing Aave through MetaMask is that, you know, one, the UI is sleeker, better tracking tools and charts. It's more mainstream friendly. UX with simpler inputs and market information. There's push notifications as well for like new proposals, liquidation alerts, that kind of stuff, which isn't so easy to do currently without, you know, extra services. You know, no need for a browser at all and faster actions and connection through the app. And in the future, IPFS hosting and easy Polygon and layer 2 switching, which is pretty important and good to see.
Another project we keep mentioning is the Index Corp. And their products are pretty popular, be it DPI Index, the ETH2X, the BED, which is the Bitcoin, Ethereum, and the DeFi, the DPI Index. And we've also mentioned that they built, the whole protocol is built on top of the SET protocol. Like SET protocol is underlying basically technology, let's say, or smart contracts that are used to enable all these different tokens to be bundled together. Now, the Index team have now made a proposal to gain greater autonomy from SET Labs, who oversee the SET protocol. In a proposal, the team outlined how the Index team are actually dependent on SET administratively because the SET team holds the keys to the wallet. And therefore, Index Corp can't independently execute the results of Index's, let's say, established governance process. Another issue that goes along with that is that SET have 28% of the Index tokens. And that does raise a question around fairness. Like, is it fair that they own 28% when some people are questioning whether they provide 28% of the value that's gone into the recent growth and success of the Index Corp. In any case, let's see how the proposal goes and we'll keep you updated on that side. Now, I think we also have some optimism news, right?
Yeah, going back to optimism, they actually announced that since their mainnet is running pretty stable, they began opening up to dApps that can be deployed. They've released their criteria for whitelisting, which we previously covered, you know, the whole sushi kind of Uniswap whitelisting drama, and they promised to approve projects within 2 weeks. They also mentioned that Mainnet Optimism has done over 250,000 transactions since their last protocol release, and there will be one more major upgrade coming in the next 3 months. It's going to remove most of the remaining OVM DevEx hurdles. For now, though, they're still keeping transaction throughput below L1 levels, although they said they will double it next week. And on a side note, the graph have also integrated Optimism, so you know developers can easily access Optimism on-chain data. And if you're a developer, you probably already know how important the graph is. So good to see that, you know, Optimism is on the graph and being serviced by the graph.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to see. And you know, we haven't mentioned ETH 2.0 too much, but it's worth noting that there is now over 7 million ETH or $20 billion worth of ETH being staked on the Beacon chain. So hat tip to Anthony Sassano for kind of pointing it out in this tweet. That's an incredible number, and it shows just how much it's actually grown. And ETH 2 is actually so much bigger than layer 2s right now, even though layer 2s are catching up fast, I guess. It's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. Now, coming on to NFTs, what's happened this week?
Yep, as always, lots happening in NFT world, or in the NFT world. So a few weeks ago on this podcast, we actually talked about PartyDAO's Party Bid, where basically groups of members can pool together their resources, buy expensive NFTs. Each member that participates would then own a fraction of that NFT. So I think we saw like one with a zombie CryptoPunk, and you know, there's many more going on. But Fractional, the protocol that enables fractional ownership, recently announced that they've just raised $7.9 million in funding, led by Paradigm. And in a blog post, they detail how they've had an amazing July, their first month, with over 200 unique curators and 2,500 unique owners of fractions. Some of the cool stuff that happened over the last month with Fractional includes, you know, the party bid, 1,200 ETH purchase of that zombie CryptoPunk we mentioned, which we also covered, you know, a couple weeks ago. Twin, where Anana Mix, an NFT collector, worked with Justin Eversano to fractionalize Twin Flames 49, which was sold at Sotheby's. And so far, over 700 NFTs have been fractionalized. So, you know, with this impressive growth, funds like Paradigm, Variant Fund, Flamingo DAO, and Robot Ventures, they've all joined the funding round to provide Fractional with the funds required to keep growing and building out their product. Super cool to see. I mean, me personally, going on Twitter and stuff, you know, I've noticed the increase in discussions about fractionalized ownership. And, you know, it's definitely, as we see a lot of these expensive NFTs, you know, be worth more and more, it's becoming a thing, you know, fractionalized ownership. And it's very easy, but very possible with NFTs. And so it's cool to see it being explored.
I think it also shows that NFTs can be used within DeFi as well, because you're kind of splitting up the NFT, for example. You're splitting up the value inside. And I think there's going to be all sorts of new applications. So it's really cool to see that.
For sure. And next on the list, we have Super Rare, which is an NFT marketplace that focuses more on scarcity, you know, hence the name Super Rare. They recently launched their token Rare. It's the next step to decentralize the marketplace and protocol or platform itself. So this token is basically going to act as the governance or a curation token, giving more power to the artists and collectors. 15% of the total supply was airdropped to past users of the platform. And SuperRare's DAO, which, you know, was spun up recently with this, is going to vote on additional spaces or galleries to inspire community-driven art and earn commissions on each sale, with commissions being given back to the DAO treasury. So, you know, this trend of airdropping previous users, it seems like a very good way to make sure governance and future decisions, you know, is in the hands of the right people, of course, previous users and people that are familiar and comfortable and, you know, with the platform. So if you've ever used Super Rare in the past, you might want to check if you're eligible to claim some of that rare. And last up on the NFT list for this week, that at least we, you know, have time to cover, is going to be Etherrock, which is actually an NFT project that spawned out of 2017 and has only just recently blown up, you know, in both attention and price. We've seen things like Mooncats and other things like that, where people bring back these super old projects, NFT projects, whatever, from years ago, and rediscover them, I guess. And only a couple weeks ago, you were still able to mint these rocks. I think last I checked, it was somewhere around 9 or 10 ETH. And that's before they were all sold out to mint that rock. And there's only 100 total supply. And, you know, obviously now at time of recording, they've long been minted. But it's just crazy how quickly they've skyrocketed. So, you know, what was 9 to 10 ETH a couple of weeks ago, we're now seeing the floor price for one rock over $500,000. And even Justin Sun, the founder of Tron, he jumped on the bandwagon I saw just today and saying, you know, he paid over $500,000 for one of the rocks. And it just brings, like, you know, the whole pet rock thing to a whole new level. And while they're entirely useless, it's not going to stop people from speculating and enjoying them and having fun. So just crazy to see how much they've blown up, I guess.
Do these rocks have unique attributes? Like, what is there about a rook? Like, what does it even look like? Like a rook?
So some of them, like, I guess the attributes is like, I guess some of the colors, like some are maybe a more brown shade or a darker gray. But someone even pointed out, like, they don't even have metadata that like contains the image. So the reality is the image you see isn't really even attached to the NFT. So I forget who exactly posted about it on Twitter, but they had a pretty decent thread, and it basically just went on about like, sure, the metadata is not there, and yes, it's quite literally a rock. But you know, it's not going to stop people from spending their money and speculating on silly things. Like, you have people wearing $100,000 gold chains, right? I mean, what's that? What can you use your gold chain for? I mean, for looks, sure. And same with a rock, you know, you can show off your pet rock, I guess. So, that's really all there is to it, as far as I know. It's just an actual picture of a rock.
And there you have it. Another interesting week from the land of Ethereum. I mean, we hope you're really enjoying this crazy ride. Like, whatever your involvement is in Ethereum, in crypto, whether you're an OG or just a hodler, or even just like a curious bystander, just looking in this crazy and wacky world of Ethereum and crypto, always remember to have fun and enjoy this ride. Thank you again for listening, and until we catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
This podcast is supported by the awesome team at Kyber Network. For more information and to find out how Kyber Network provides liquidity to over 100 different dApps, wallets, and exchanges, check out kyber.network.